James, tell me about growing up in Wisconsin and then making the move to New York City. Did you feel like you'd found home?
Yeah, in a lot of ways. You know, I grew up in Milwaukee, which is a big city. It's a city of about 1 million people. It's like about 75 miles north of Chicago. But it was a very kind of square place when I was, especially when I was a teenager, and it's not much of a good place for music, especially jazz, which was what I was really into at that time, because I originally came to New York intending to become a world famous jazz musician, but things didn't quite work out that way. At the time that I came to New York, it was in the end of 1975, and when I you know had actually made the decision to make the move, I started buying the Village Voice every week just to see what was going on, and I kept seeing all these ads for some place called CBGB, and you know, listening to these, obviously were some kind of rock and roll band playing there, and there'd be little pictures of them, and I really didn't know what it was about, but I thought it looked like something really interesting was going on there.
A lot of the musicians around that CBGB scene, they really played up to being a fish out of water. It seemed to be a way for them to push their creative boundaries. Is that how it appeared to you?
There were some people like the Ramones who had grown up in New York, but mostly it was people who had come from someplace else. You know, I mean, just people came from all kinds of places. All of, you know, like Lydia Lunch was from Rochester, New York, and Richard Hell was from Lexington, Kentucky. You know, for some reason, all these people felt drawn to New York at the same time. And, you know, people who worked in the places where they had lived before, they were complete outsiders, you know, because the culture at that time was, now when I look back on it, it doesn't seem so bad compared to like now. But at that time, the whole culture of in the 70s, in the mainstream culture, it was really tasteless, that's for sure. You know, it was just an uncreative, you know, and you know, I certainly felt like a total, totally alienated from everything. And you know, even though we were all people that had kind of come out, you know, growing up and young, you know, during the hippie movement, we were all completely alienated from that too. And we're trying to do something really as opposite the hippie movement in a lot of ways as possible. My ambition when I came to New York, even though I'd been into rock and roll ever since I was like 12, my ambition was to play jazz. And I really didn't have any thought of being in any rock and roll bands, although I had been in a couple. If that scene hadn't been happening, I probably would have stuck with the jazz for longer, but I just felt more and more that I fit in much more as a person, not even so much musically, but just as far as my personal attitude and philosophy fit in a lot more with the rock and rollers, the CBGBs and Naxxes than with the jazz people.
But when you started making music, did you see a way that jazz could impact on punk and vice versa?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I did have a couple of little jazz groups and played some of those free jazz loft kind of gigs. But I could see after a little while that I just was not going to make it as a jazz musician because as a person, I didn't fit in. You know, the jazz audience were kind of like old hippies. even though I loved the music, the audience was these old white hippies, which was everything I despised at the time. So I decided that I would try to put something together that would appeal to a rock and roll audience, but that would include all the stuff that I liked, like free jazz and James Brown funk. Try to put that all together in a way that the punk rockers or whatever you want to call them would like.
The physical confrontations that you engaged with during your shows, were these to heighten the feeling of the music you were putting out?
It was just to get a response from the audience because The one thing about the audience, New York audiences at that time, was they were very kind of, they all considered themselves to be extremely cool, and they didn't really, a lot of them had the attitude that they weren't going to show any emotional response to what you were doing, you know. They were going to stay cool. It didn't mean they didn't like it, but and another thing is that those clubs didn't have dance floors, which was something that bugged me a lot, because I always thought that, like, dancing was a really important part of rock and roll. It was in desperation. And it was also because, you know, my early audience was a lot of them were, like, sort of these Soho artists, real intellectuals. I was just trying to shake them out of this whole intellectual attitude they had.
So how are you putting yourself out there these days?
Well, I don't attack people. Usually. No, really, I don't. I really identify with the whole idea of being like an all-around entertainer, like, you know, like James Brown or Jackie Wilson or even like Cab Calloway or those kind of guys, you know. So there's constant, like, motion. If I'm not playing the horn, I'm singing, and if I'm not doing that, I'm dancing, or all three at the same time. I've even started studying tap dancing and throwing some of that in.